and welcome to the absolute first podcast from Workforce Solutions Review magazine. Today, we have the honor of interviewing Bill Kudyk, the godfather of the HR Technology Conference. We'll get right into it. Bill, why did you decide to make a career in the HR tech industry? Or did the HR tech industry make a career for you?
Roy, congratulations on your first podcast. I think it's terrific. I was a subscriber back when WSR was printed on paper and was always amazed by the quality of the publication. And I'm sure you're continuing that online with Bruno. Like a lot of people in the HR tech industry, I sort of fell into it without meaning to. In 1985, my college friend Esther Dyson, who was a big deal in the PC industry in the 80s and 90s, was putting out a daily newspaper about the computer industry for Ziff Davis. And on it, my co-managing editor was a guy named Joe Burns. Our startup very quickly failed. And I somewhat perversely enjoyed standing up in front of the 35 people and saying that I had been through this before when I was on the afternoon edition of the Daily News, when it folded and 90 people were let off. And I said, I want you guys to know, every one of those people has a great job now, except for me. And they sort of liked that. And Joe Burns, 4 years later, called me up and said, hey, I'm working for this company and they want to start a magazine about the use of computers in HR. And I figured you'd know the computer stuff. And as the vice president of publishing said to me, oh, the HR stuff is easy. You can just pick that up. I became editor of the magazine, and that's how it all started. It eventually led to my having the column for Human Resource Executive when the magazine folded, and then helping them buy the conference and then putting me in charge of it.
That's great, Bill. There must have been some fun moments in your career leading the HR Tech Conference. Could you share with us some of those moments?
Well, my idea of fun is a little different from most people, I think. I loved our shootouts because competition and combat have been audience pleasers since the Roman Colosseum, and people flock to that. And we all know Jason Averbuch. Well, in those days, Jason was a demo Danny for PeopleSoft. And when the head of products for PeopleSoft, head of product strategy for PeopleSoft, quit her job 2 days before the shootout, which all participants had spent weeks and months preparing for, and he was doing it by the seat of his pants, he parachuted in and he won the day when he fired up his computer and his wallpaper was his two-week-old son who had just been born and he had abandoned in order to come and do the shootout. I mean, the guy won it right there, right? I mean, truly someone with a sense of show business. The other fun things for me were things like meeting this rich guy from India who ran schools for formerly untouchable women. And he had come to the conference, believe it or not, in the early days to shop for a talent management system for his company. And I mean, people that hardly knew what talent management meant. And he was there and he understood it. And it gave me a whole new view of the third world that I had never had before. And we became very friendly. I invited him to my house in Connecticut. I kept in touch with him for years. And then, you know, meeting the leading HR tech vendor in Egypt. Yeah, of course. I mean, Oracle has a big market share in Egypt, but there's a local leading HR tech vendor, and I met him. And then the leading HR tech vendor in Japan. I found all of this miraculous, okay? And for me, great fun. It might not have been so much fun for the attendees, but for me as the co-chairman of the thing, those are some of my fondest memories.
And on the other side, as you know, I was at the HR Tech Conference in Baltimore that horrible day, 9/11/2001. What was it like for you having to tell the conference goers that we were under attack?
I can't tell you, Roy, how many people tell me they were there when I told the group. The audience must have been 2,000 instead of the 320 people that I know were in the room. What happened was we were having the analyst panel, which longtime conference goers will remember was a fixture of the conference that always led off the second morning, and four incredible experts. And I'm there leading the panel, and I'm handed a note that says, "You must tell everyone that an airplane has been flown into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack." I think I quoted verbatim. And I'd look at the note and I say, "No way am I telling people this." And I turn to the group and I say to them what was a cliche on Saturday Night Live at that point. I say, "Talk among yourselves." And I walk off the stage to go talk to the people that sent me a note who tell me about what had gone on. And, I'm just white as a sheet. So as I walk back, I'm thinking, how do you tell people something so important, so scary, and so tragic? Well, you just don't blurt it out like a surgeon does when he's just operated on your mother and comes out, as happened to me, and say, "Oh, it's colon cancer, she'll be dead in 18 months. You don't do it that way. And I thought about West Wing, which was a very popular TV show at the time. So when I got back and regained the podium, I said, "How many of you are fans of West Wing? Show me your hands," about half. And I said, "Well, from watching West Wing that when someone at the podium gets a note, it's pretty important. And when someone leaves the podium to talk about the note, it's really damn important. So let me do my best and tell you what's going on," and proceeded to tell them. And the conference, actually, we didn't. We stayed for the hour break. I don't know what I was doing during that hour break. Everyone else tells me they were rushing to TV sets on the show floor or whatever. I can't remember what I was doing. But we had a shootout, a smaller one, about just recruiting, right after the break. And literally, I think I had to knock aside Hank Stringer, if anyone remembers that name, or Doug Merritt, who probably more people know. He was a former CEO of Splunk. I literally had to elbow them away from the podium and tell everyone, "The mayor of Baltimore has just shut down the convention center and the 9 other possible terrorist targets in Baltimore. He should only be so lucky, right? And we all have to leave. And your box lunch that we were going to have today is waiting for you at the exits." That's how it went.
Wow. To change, subject here, Bill, you have interviewed a lot of people during your career. Can you tell us about, a couple of those interviews that you thought went really well, people that, had the most impact or were the most innovative that interviewed?
Sure. It's hard to be all those things at once. I mean, Dave Duffield, who is the godfather of the HR technology industry, not just of the conference, is a terrible public speaker. He just gets frightened to death. He needs beta blockers. He needs Thorazine. I don't know what, but he's just really bad at it. But he's not so bad talking for recording one-on-one. And I did a podcast just like this one with him for the Bill Kudyk radio show, which I started eons ago, and ended up with 183 interviews in the archive. And what I realized was that he fundamentally changed our industry. You might know that he was a mainframe HR software guy before PeopleSoft. Integral Software was one of the top 4 mainframe software companies of its day, was until PeopleSoft got started in the 80s, mid-80s. But the other names were much bigger, it's Dun & Bradstreet Software and others. But that he, who was a technologist, he actually didn't know all that much about HR. He surrounded himself with people who did, but he was a technologist. He was an IBM engineer. And he changed it because he allowed HR for the very first time to have some control over the applications. And that's a trend that he started, getting it off the mainframe, where, of course, it was the priests in their white coats in the air-conditioned room, and you put in your change request and it went under a pile of 85 others and maybe it got made in 4 months or whatever. But he, with client server, you actually could control a little bit the application. I mean, remember, I was first explained to me, he said, you know, when you run a report, you can actually move the data fields from one place to another, where in the mainframe days, you had to ask someone to do that for you. Well, we've all seen that trend move with lightning speed through self-service and onto all the latest developments. But I think that that is the single most important innovation that has gone on in this field since I've been in it. And, you know, I was in it from 1989 until 31 years later. I can't even figure out the dates of that. But yeah, till recently.
You know, going to the HR tech conference for years, you've seen major shifts in as the HR function mutated and the available technology got more and more complex and sophisticated. The move from on-premise applications to the cloud, from reporting to getting analytical insights, from hiring to talent management, and now the emergence of the digital transformation and the employee experience. In your opinion, what was the most significant shift in the industry?
Before I answer that, can I plug myself? If you want to hear those interviews with Dave Duffield, they are available for free on iTunes. And you have to search for The Bill Cutick Radio Show.
Oh, great. Thanks for that.
Now, I was always one to self-promote, Roy. Mm-hmm. Given that my historical perspective is the most useful thing I bring to the party, let me say that I still think the most important change in HR technology was self-service. And you know, Roy, better than anyone, I bet you Bruno knows as well, that the promise of self-service has been unfulfilled for 20 damn years. I mean, I remember when, oh God, who was the portly guy who looked like Santa Claus, was talking about self-service in the year 2000 or 2002 or 3. And as Roe Henson, who used to be the voice and face of PeopleSoft, even after Oracle bought it, always said, you know, the promises of one technology are always fulfilled by subsequent technologies, not by itself. So self-service really hasn't worked very well for a very, very, very long time. But the idea of it is so, it turns everything upside down. The idea of people actually being responsible for their own data and doing their own transactions. I mean, it so fundamentally changes how HR has operated since the beginning that now that it is becoming true because of the latest technologies, particularly things like voice and bots and all the rest. I mean, the problem with self-service always was we all use software in our daily lives, and there's some software we use a lot. We tend to live in it. And I live in Word, and I live in Outlook, and I don't know what you guys live in, but I live in those two things, and I got the muscle memory for all of it, and it's just easy peasy. But throw me into a new environment once a year where it's totally unfamiliar, and I get lost, like anyone does. I can't do it. And that was always the problem with self-service, is that it was somehow different from the computer environment that people lived in every day. But now I think it's finally catching on. I think it's the most important thing, even though it's old.
Yeah, so it would be AI that's driving that change, right? Because you know, absolutely, the transactions are just too complicated. That's one of the major issues.
AI is enabling, finally, good self-service, right? I think that's the proper way to look at it.
Okay.
So we're in agreement. What a boring show. We haven't argued once.
You know, Bill, you have retired, but it feels like you're still very active. What are you spending your time on? I heard about you writing a book. Is that a professional book? Is that just a fiction book?
Oh, God. I'm not writing the book that everyone urged me to write for years, which was The History of the HR Technology Industry, which, you know, 15 people would buy. And two of them might finish reading. Instead, I am writing a nonfiction book that relates to my previous career as a daily newspaper guy. I mean, I worked for the Boston Globe and the New York Post very briefly, the New York Daily News. I wrote for the New York Times and others. And so let me read you the introduction. It's sort of a surprise. And you guys are old enough to know the main character. No one, not enough are, I'm afraid. It's called Two Dark Lords, Klaus von Bülow and my father, hunting down one charming sociopath, growing up with another. So it's really the fact that my life has been inextricably bound up with two charming sociopaths. The first was my father, who was a classic con man, who had the instincts of a jungle cat. I once watched him walk into a room full of absolute strangers and emerge in 30 minutes with someone who could do him some good hanging from his jaws. And of course, the second sociopath, Klaus von Bülow, was very famous in 83 when he was accused of twice trying to kill his heiress wife over her $75 million fortune. And his trial, not too many people know this, his trial was the very first broadcast live gavel to gavel before O.J. Simpson. And its lurid trinity of sex, money, and high society later inspired the hit movie Reversal of Fortune, which was really well done, that starred Glenn Close and earned Jeremy Irons an Oscar. So the book is sort of a memoir about my life and my life with these guys and what they were like and all the rest. The thing that I really bring to the table is that no one knew anything about Klaus before he met and married this super rich woman at the age of 40. And I, before the first trial, spent 6 weeks in four countries in Europe investigating the people who knew him at every stage of his life, from his birth through prep school in Denmark, college at Cambridge, a postgraduate year in Paris, a barrister apprenticeship in London, and then a summer on Capri before he did indeed work for J. Paul Getty when he was the richest man in the world. So a pretty interesting character, but in the end, I do recognize that he was indeed a sociopath, which is someone who literally has no conscience, does not experience guilt, never second guesses himself about anything, and that as such, he would no more hesitate to murder a rich wife threatening to divorce him than to flick a fly off his dinner jacket. So if any of your listeners have wonderful book agents, send them my way. The manuscript is finished. I've just begun to try to sell it. And, you know, it's tacky enough that it could be wildly popular as opposed to the history of the HR technology industry.
Wow, I'm looking forward to reading it. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I'd like to thank my co-host, Bruno Carinet, and of course, our guest, Bill Cudick, for your reflections on the industry. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you. I'm just so pleased to be your first guest. Roy and Bruno, good luck with this series.
Thank you, Bill, very much.